Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a starting receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
Good afternoon, Greater Lansing, and welcome to the most exciting hour of your day. It is AM 870 WKAR's Current Sports. Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin today. Alec Rio riding shotgun behind the glass, and Tino Abarca and Michael Duke are our production assistants for today's show. A lot to get into today, man, and I want to pick up right where we left off with yesterday's show. And you know what? On that note, props to our listeners, to all of our callers yesterday who kept a great dialogue going. Because of your great work, I barely got to get a word in yesterday, honestly. I didn't talk until about the 157 mark. So what I want to do first is I want to pick up where we left off with Al kind of going in depth, breaking down what went down before the game on Saturday between the Michigan Wolverines and the Michigan State Spartans with Devin Bush and the Michigan State team walk, Chase Winovich's comments after the game, all that. I'll give you my abridged thoughts right here, starting with, you know what, Alec, I don't care about any of that stuff. I don't think watching Devin Bush tear up the Spartan logo and, you know, whether Spartan players did or did not rip LaVert Hill's headphones off, I don't think there was a winner amidst any of that mess. I don't think it was a good look for either team, but this is a rivalry game, and we've seen this game get ugly in the past. Granted, maybe not to this level exactly with Devin Bush tearing up the turf, but only 4 years ago, Joe Bolden stabbed a stake into the turf at Spartan Stadium ahead of the game. This game is what it is at this point, folks, and I'd even make the argument right here, right now, that the nastiness of this game has reached its zenith. It's at its highest point. This game right now is more toxic than it has ever been. This whole idea that Michigan State isn't a concern for Michigan, or that this rivalry pales in comparison to rivalries like Michigan-Notre Dame or even Michigan-Ohio State, I'm not buying it from a fan perspective. Absolutely not. This game is more toxic between family and friends than any other rivalry Michigan's involved in, and maybe any rivalry in the country, to be honest with you. And as far as the players are concerned, you know, Devin Bush doesn't scrape up the midfield logo of a team he doesn't care about. You don't go over and talk smack like Donovan Peoples-Jones did after the game to the student section if this isn't a big-time rivalry game. And as a team, you sure as hell don't dance on the opposing logo after beating your opponent if you don't hate that team and you don't have that game circled on your calendar for an entire year. Jim Harbaugh said as much, I believe, yesterday, Alec. He said that the Michigan Wolverines and him specifically had this game circled on their calendar for an entire year following last year's loss. And in Schembechler Hall all throughout last week had pictures posted all over the place of the Spartans celebrating at Michigan Stadium following their 14-10 victory last year. You know, this rivalry, it's real, folks. And if Jim Harbaugh didn't see this game as a big-time game in the past, he certainly does now. And you know what? I may not necessarily have the same opinion as Al did regarding the pregame antics. You know, him saying he would have liked to have seen a fight between the players. And Darian Harris kind of reiterated those comments on Sunday on Press Pass with Jack Ebling. The other show I work on, he said specifically that, you know, Spartan players, he's a former captain, obviously, 2015 captain, former linebacker, played on the MSU team that reached the playoff and won the Big Ten in 2015 as well. And he kind of made the point that, you know, as Spartans, they don't break their ranks for anybody. And if someone's in the way on their team walk, they're certainly not going to get out of their way. And he kind of made the point that, you know, if he was still at Michigan State and that would have happened, what Devin Bush did, there wouldn't have even been a game. A fight would have broke out right then and there, and, you know, we might have had to have postponed things a little bit longer. But you know what? For me, I guess I don't really agree with Al. I don't care about that stuff the way Al does. I guess I don't care about that stuff the way Darian does. But like Al, as far as Chase Winovich is concerned, I have no problem with what Chase said after the game, you know, the little brother comments. Do I think it's a little bit stupid to throw out little brother in 2018? Yeah, I do. I got to level with you. I do think it's kind of stupid because, you know, when Mike Hart first made that comment in 2007, that was after beating the Spartans 28-24, and that was sealing his 4-0 record against the Spartans in this game. He never lost this game in his career at Michigan. Michigan got the win on Saturday. They're the better team, and they deserve to win that game, and Chase Winovich had a hell of a game. But let's face it, Alec, he's a redshirt senior who's finishing his career with a 2-3 record against the Spartans. So to me, I just don't think that phrase carries the same weight as it did in 2007. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I can totally understand the emotions, you know, running through you after you beat your rival like that. And, you know, it's just a grooming of egos. Like, that's just how I see it. And just, I don't know, comments like that, it just doesn't make sense to me because, like you said, he went 2-3 against the Spartans. So to me, you're right. It doesn't carry nearly as much weight as it did back in 2007 when they were beating the Spartans more regularly than they have been in the last 11 seasons.
Yep. Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. And you know what? To Al's point yesterday as well, he made the argument that, you know, you win the game afterwards, you get to say whatever you want. And to that point, I'd say God bless Chase Winovich. And you know what? He deserved, he earned the right to talk in that sense. So, you know, I don't have an issue with it from that perspective. I don't have an issue with him talking smack. I think it's a little bit outdated to be throwing little bro around in 2018. But you know what? It is what it is. So I guess those are my brief thoughts on what went down before the game and after the game on Saturday. And up next, we'll break down for you the actual X's and O's of what happened in that game. You know what comes first, though? Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, and we start off our headliners today with Jim Harbaugh, kind of doubling down on his comments following the game on Saturday, talking about how it was Bush League of the Spartans to not move out of the Michigan Wolverines' way during their team walk prior to the game. He has called for an investigation into the claims over the spat with MSU. Jim Harbaugh, yesterday on the Inside Michigan Football radio show, was asked about the statement released from MSU yesterday that detailed the Spartans' pregame schedule. In it, MSU also said it asked Michigan's players to leave the Spartan Stadium field as a courtesy. That is not true, Harbaugh said. There is a conflict in the explanations, and it should be investigated, and I look forward to seeing the outcome of that. Earlier yesterday, Harbaugh alleged that MSU officials told Michigan that it originally planned to begin its field-wide march, a pregame ritual for MSU that spans the length of the field, at 9:45 a.m., they then moved it to 9:55. MSU did not take the field until shortly after 10 a.m., with video of the march surfacing at approximately 10:02 a.m. Michigan linebackers Devin Bush and Kalik Hudson were already on the field, as was defensive back Lavert Hill, defensive tackle Lawrence Marshall, and a handful of Michigan staffers. So, conflicting reports there. We'll see what comes of it. Shifting gears here, MSU basketball has been ranked number 10 in the country in the AP's preseason poll released yesterday afternoon. The Spartans, who finished the 2017-2018 season ranked number 5 in the AP poll, received 1,024 total points. Kansas, with 37 first-place votes, was ranked number 1 with 1,581 points. They are followed by Kentucky at number 2, Gonzaga at number 3, Duke at number 4, and Virginia at number 5. The top 10 is rounded out by Tennessee at 6, Nevada at 7, North Carolina at 8, and defending champions Villanova at 9. This is the 7th straight year the Spartans have opened a season ranked among the preseason top 25, and the 11th time in the last 12 years. Under head coach Tom Izzo, Michigan State has been ranked in the preseason 19 times. The Spartans are one of 3 Big Ten schools ranked in the top 25, joined by Michigan at number 19 and Purdue at number 24. MSU will kick off their season on Tuesday, November 6th, as they face top-ranked Kansas in the Champions Classic in Indianapolis, Indiana. All right, great news for Spartan fans and students everywhere. Michigan State, Maryland, the game scheduled for November 3rd will kick off at noon. The Big Ten Conference has announced that the Michigan State, Maryland game will be televised on ESPN2 and, as I said, will kick off at noon. MSU is currently 4-3 and will return to action on Saturday to take on Purdue at noon in Spartan Stadium. The Boilermakers are also 4-3 coming off of a huge win at home against the Ohio State Buckeyes. That game will be televised on ESPN. To kick off the beginning of Big Ten Women's Basketball Media Week, the conference released the preseason coaches and media polls in addition to the preseason All-Big Ten teams yesterday. Michigan State redshirt junior guard Shea Colley has earned preseason All-Big Ten honors from the coaches. Last season, Colley led the Spartans in scoring and was 23rd in the Big Ten, averaging 12.4 points per game. Colley was also tied for 8th in assists with 4.3 assists per game. In her first season with the Spartans, the guard also ended the season tied for 5th in steals with 1.9 steals per game. The Spartans finished the 2017-2018 season with a 19-14 record, advancing to the Sweet 16 of the WNIT. Michigan State will return 4 of its top scorers last season, led by all Big Ten honorees Colley, Taryn McCutcheon, and Jenna Allen. Michigan State field hockey senior Madison O'Neill has been selected as an alternate field player for this year's Victory Sports Tours / National Field Hockey Coaches Association Division I Senior Game. The Victory Sports Tours / Division I Senior Game features top senior players in the nation. Selected seniors are given the opportunity to represent their institution while competing against their peers. O'Neill and the Spartans are set for the first round of the Big Ten tournament later this week as they face Indiana in the first round on Friday, October 26th. The winner of Friday's game will face top-seeded Maryland on Sunday. Game times have yet to be decided. More news coming out of Hockey Town as the Detroit Red Wings didn't get into their game yesterday against the Carolina Hurricanes until the third period after relying on Jimmy Howard to do the heavy lifting before that. I was at work at one point during the game yesterday and I just checked my phone and I saw that at about 2 minutes left in the first period, the Red Wings were being outscored 18-5, so that's always good to see. They faced the Carolina Hurricanes, who tilted Little Caesars Arena yesterday through the first two periods, dominating in puck possession to the degree the Wings didn't even look like they belonged on the same ice. They finally responded past the midway point of the third period, but they couldn't undo the damage of their bad play and lost 3-1. With the loss, the Winged Wheelers fall to 1-6-2 on the season and will next host the Winnipeg Jets on Friday at Little Caesars Arena. The Atlanta Falcons topped the New York Jets last night 23-20. Odell Beckham Jr. and Saquon Barkley found the end zone for the Giants, and Matt Ryan went 31 of 39, throwing for 379 yards and a touchdown to Marvin Hall. Tevin Coleman added a touchdown of his own, rushing for 30 yards for the score. The Falcons improved to 3-4 with the win, but are still in last place in the NFC South. The Giants dropped to 1-6 on the season and are last in the NFC East. You gotta wonder if this will be Eli Manning's last season under center in the Big Apple. Just after 8 p.m. tonight, the Red Sox will welcome the Los Angeles Dodgers to Fenway Park for the first game of the 144th edition of the World Series. The Red Sox are attempting to win the franchise's fourth title in the last 14 years and continue to establish themselves as a portrait of sustained success in professional sports. The Dodgers, meanwhile, have not won a World Series title since 1988 and are looking to rebound from a loss in the championship series last October. Tonight it will be Chris Sale on the mound for the Red Sox and Clayton Kershaw on the mound for the Dodgers. Interesting to see what comes of that series. Alec, do you have a prediction for the World Series?
I think that the Red Sox will take it in Game 7. I think it'll go all the way.
Red Sox in 7, eh? That's bold.
Mm-hmm.
I got them winning in 5, but we'll see what comes of it. A lot of wounds, I guess, for Tiger fans as former Tigers David Price, Rick Porcello, J.D. Martinez, and Ian Kinsler will all be suiting up for the Boston Red Sox in that series. It's almost like the Tigers are the Red Sox farm team at this point. Those wrap up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, please feel free. The phone number is 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. Share what's on your mind. You can also tweet the show at WKAR_sports or tweet me directly at Jay Kerlose. That is at JKIRLOSE. Again, this is Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports.
Johnson to throw it. Looking. Inside. Touchdown, Wolverines. Nico Collins. And that's the first passing touchdown for Michigan against Michigan State since 2011. Patterson. Widening up. He's got a receiver. Peoples Jones down the sideline. Peoples Jones. Touchdown, Wolverines. 79 yards. Final play of the game, and it's over. 21-7, Michigan comes to East Lansing and defeats the Spartans.
Yes, that is Gus Johnson on the call for Saturday's showdown between the Michigan State Spartans and the Michigan Wolverines. Shifting gears here, let's get into exactly what went down in that game. Michigan obviously came away with a 21-7 victory, and any statistic you look at will tell you this game wasn't even that close. I mean, Jack Ebling on Sunday described the game at halftime as a 7-0 ass-whooping. To be honest with you, the Spartans were lucky to be in that position at halftime, and I would say this game was not nearly as close as that score would suggest. But as you look at it from the perspective of a Spartan, you really have to organize the aspects of this game into two groups. The things you can be upset and angry about, and the things you just sort of have to expect, or accept, I should say. Now let me explain what I mean by that. Right now, on October 23rd of 2018, Michigan is the better football team. There's no denying that, Spartan fans, as we sit here today. But you can also face the fact that the Spartans have a litany of injuries at key positions. And remember what I said a minute ago. I would put this into the group of something that you really can't be upset or angry about. And I'm not making excuses when I say this either, because as I just said, Michigan is the better football team. But with that being said, you know, many Spartan fans were very frustrated and angry following the losses early in the season, both on the road at Arizona State and at home against Northwestern. And I think deservedly so. You know, there's a lot of blame to go around for both of those games. The poor offensive outputs are certainly what you would look at as the key factors in why they lost both of those games. You know, only scoring 13 points on the road at Arizona State and only 19 at home against Northwestern. And I think when you look at both of those games, I think it's fair to criticize Brian Lewerke, and more on Lewerke in a minute, as well as the play calling, the inability to run the football on early downs and, you know, falling behind the sticks on late downs, third downs, and failing to convert on those. And, you know, it's just, it's something that, you know, it's fair to be frustrated about if you're a Spartan fan, you know. Obviously, this offense has really struggled under Dave Warner the last several years, and outside of the 2014 season, it's been a struggle offensively basically since he's been the offensive coordinator here at Michigan State. But as you look at Saturday's game, you know, and you factor in that, you know, the team was missing Cody White, obviously. Jalen Naylor was on a pitch count coming back from an injury as well. Cam Chambers was playing with a broken hand, wearing a club underneath his glove. And Felton Davis tore his Achilles in the second quarter. I don't think it's fair to be angry or upset at the offense's output, you know, just from the perspective of, you know, who is left to pick up the slack, I guess? You know, are you supposed to be angry that Brandon Sowards didn't go off for 120 yards in that game? You know, am I supposed to be frustrated that redshirt freshman C.J. Hayes, you know, didn't really get into the game or make much of an impact? I mean, you know, for me, Alec, this is just something that, as a Spartan fan, you just kind of have to accept that there have been a ton of injuries, obviously, this season, and the Spartans haven't had their top corner all season. And, you know, to that end, I just don't understand. I don't think there's much you can be upset about, be angry about, I should say. You can certainly be upset about the misfortune that's overtaken the Spartans this year. But, you know, from that end, I really don't think it's fair to be too angry about the lack of production from the offense. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so you can't get the job done when your leading receiver has 24 yards, but I totally understand most of the wide receiving core that we had at the beginning of the season, they're all injured. Brian Lewerke, it was revealed that he had shoulder issues during that game. Like, there was just a lot of factors that played into this game. And I'm not trying to sound like Wolverine fans who are saying, oh, well, it was the monsoon weather last year that caused us to lose. I mean, you got to win no matter what, you know? And failing to convert on third and fourth down was just the needle in the back, to be honest.
Yeah, well said, certainly. And you know what, on that note, you can kind of shift. I'm going to shift, actually, into, you know, what I think is totally fair for Spartans to be frustrated about. And you just touched on, I believe it was 0-for-12 on third down.
0-for-12, yep.
Finished the game 0-for-12 on third down. So you can certainly criticize the play calling from that end, and you can certainly criticize the play of Brian Lewerke as well. And that's kind of the one injury that I am just... I'm not letting Brian Lewerke off the hook for this performance, certainly. You know, he finished the game 5-for-25, which is just absolutely atrocious. And, you know, to that end, you know, the Spartans expected a lot more from Brian Lewerke coming into this season, and he hasn't been the guy anyone expected him to be. I think right now he has 8 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. And so, you know, he needs to shoulder a lot of the blame for this loss and, you know, for the failings of the offense so far in the season. And it's been revealed that he has a shoulder injury right now, and you know, if that's the case, I'd certainly want to see him shut down, at least for the foreseeable future. And I'd love to see the Spartans give Rocky Lombardi a shot on Saturday against the Purdue Boilermakers, who, as I just stated, absolutely steamrolled the Ohio State Buckeyes on Saturday. That's one of the most impressive wins I've seen from Jeff Brohm in his time at Purdue. And, you know, they travel to Spartan Stadium on Saturday. And I got to level with you, Alec. I just don't see how the Spartans are going to be able to keep up in that game just because... You know, you look at a guy like Rondale Moore, and you look at a quarterback like David Blau, and, you know, they're such a high-powered offense, obviously. And Rondale Moore is, in my mind, the best receiver in the Big Ten and one of the best receivers in all of college football. And I just don't understand how the Spartans are going to be able to keep pace with the Boilermakers, with their offensive weapons. And I'm also not really sure how they're going to limit Rondale Moore. You know, Josiah Scott's been out all season. He'd be the guy that you'd put on Rondale Moore. Is it going to be Justin Lane? Is it going to be Trey Pearson? I mean, you saw Trey Pearson get burned by Donovan Peoples-Jones for a 79-yard touchdown on Saturday. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where the Spartans go from here, but I don't give them much of a chance in Saturday's game against the Purdue Boilermakers.
Yeah, so to, like, touch off on that, another thing to note was that U of M, their time of possession was almost triple of what the Spartans had. So U of M had the ball for a solid 41 minutes of that game while... MSU only had a little under 19 minutes. Like, the amount of times where it was just three and outs was just not okay from an offensive coordinator's perspective.
Absolutely, I would agree with that. And you know what, watching that game, I kind of had the takeaway that the Spartans had their opportunities in that game, but they would have had to have been damn near perfect. They would have needed to have taken advantage of every opportunity that Michigan presented them. And whether that was, you know, obviously the fumble that Raekwon Williams forced on the 7-yard line, I basically said at halftime to my buddy I was sitting with that in order for the Spartans to win this game, they were going to need a defensive touchdown. And they basically got a defensive touchdown. You know, the Spartans, Raekwon Williams forced the fumble at the 7-yard line, you know, only a 7-yard field from there. The Spartans were able to cash in for their lone touchdown of the day. But they had other opportunities in that game. You know, they had all the momentum at that point. They kicked the ball off. Ambry Thomas muffs the return, only gets out to the 12-yard line, and Kari Willis on third down drops an interception. You know, with the amount of injuries, the litany of injuries that the Michigan State Spartans have right now, they would have needed to have taken advantage of every opportunity they were given, and they just simply did not. You know, you look at, it was a hell of a play by Grant Perry to help break up that pass that Willis almost had, but Kari Willis needs to make that interception if the Spartans want to win this game. One play later, Shakur Brown back to receive the punt, muffs the punt, and completely turns over the field position in a game that at that point the elements were a huge factor. And I know that Michigan didn't wind up scoring on that drive as they fumbled themselves on about the 25 of the Spartans. But, you know, that was a point in time where the Spartans had all the momentum in the game, and they were winning the field position battle for basically the first time all game because they were going 3 and out on their own 15-yard line basically all throughout the first half, and the defense was picking up the slack for the offense's woes. That was the one point in time where they'd kind of flipped field position, and they were unable to take advantage based off of a fumble. So, to me, like I said, the Spartans would have had to have played almost flawless football in order to win that game and taken advantage of every opportunity that Michigan handed them. Let's shoot straight here, Alec. They were given opportunities to win this game or to at least make this game more competitive. You know, you saw at one point Justin Lane, who took some snaps on offense, he got behind his defender I believe it was in the first half. He got behind his defender on a streak route. Brian Lewerke delivers the ball out of bounds. Probably would have been a touchdown if he hit him in stride. You know, in the second half, multiple times, the Spartans were running slants over the middle of the field, and Brian Lewerke was just flat out missing his receivers. And none of that could have happened if the Spartans wanted to win that game, but it all did. And as a result, you know, it was a 21-7 loss, and, you know, they fall to 4-3 on the season.
Yeah, and see, the defense is concerning to me because I saw shades of that also at the Northwestern game, and that's like one of my biggest fears coming into Purdue.
Cause shades
like
of said, what?
Their defense is giving up the long ball, just like all those long passes that they've been giving up. I can totally see that happening against Purdue this coming Saturday.
Agree 100%. Rondale Moore is a hell of an athlete, and you know, it'll be interesting to see how the Spartans plan on defending against him. So what I want to do right now is I want to hit our first break. And when we come back, we will play for you in a little bit Mark D'Antonio's press conference from earlier today. But right now I want to shift gears and I want to talk about the Detroit Lions' very impressive win over the Miami Dolphins. So stick around. You are listening to AM870 WKAR's Current Sports. I'm Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Jack Kerwin here in for the great Al Martin. Al will be back in tomorrow. Just a family matter he's dealing with. But if you have any thoughts on, you know, what I gave to you just in that last segment, please give us a call, 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. Tweet the show at WKAR_sports or tweet me directly at jkerlose. That's at jkirlose. What I want to do right now is I kind of want to shift gears to the Detroit Lions, and this will be a happier note for a lot of Spartan fans out there right now. You know, the Detroit Lions coasted to a very impressive 32-21 victory on Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. And I know Brock Osweiler is certainly not Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, but hell, the Lions already beat Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers this year anyway, so I guess they can get a win against a quarterback like Brock Osweiler. But, you know, following the disaster of a start that was to this season where the Lions lost 48-17 against the New York Jets and then fell 30-27 against the San Francisco 49ers, but the game wasn't even that close. The Lions have now won three of their last four and are just outside the top of the NFC North standings. And I just think right now this is a very interesting time to be a Lions fan because, you know, now might be the point in time where you're buying stock, if you will, in the Detroit Lions. You know, they're a team that's certainly an up-and-comer in the NFL, and while teams like the Chicago Bears have got off to fast starts, certainly they've lost their last two. And, you know, for me, I think the Detroit Lions have a pretty good shot moving forward here. If they can get the win next week at Seattle, you know, let me preface this by saying this. If the Detroit Lions right now, in order to get me to completely buy in, they need to get the win next week at home against the Seattle Seahawks, who are also 3-3. And to me, I think that's extremely doable. You know, I've seen what the Seattle Seahawks have done this season, and, you know, they're just like a lot of teams in the NFL in that, you know, you kind of have your teams at the top of the league. You got the LA Rams, who are undefeated. You got the Kansas City Chiefs, who have one loss. You got the San Diego Chargers as well, I would throw in there, as well as the New Orleans Saints. It's kind of the top of the top right now in the NFL. And then you got the teams at the bottom, like the New York Giants, and, you know, they're not really even worth discussing at this point in time, but a lot of teams are in the middle, Alec, and the Detroit Lions are one of these teams in that they have a couple of very impressive wins over teams like the New England Patriots, who got off to a slow start, and the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers, and they also have some pretty horrible losses that they suffered as well. But, you know, that's not tremendously different than a lot of other teams in the NFL, including the Seattle Seahawks, who, if I'm not mistaken, lost to the Denver Broncos at the beginning of the year. So even though we're six games into the season for the Detroit Lions, I feel like for the Lions it's almost a reset because they're at an even 500 along with a lot of other teams. And, you know, I just kind of think that they can still make or break their season at this point. I don't think a whole lot is set in stone, and I think the Lions are kind of looking at a clean slate following a really poor start, which, as a Lions fan, following a loss to the New York Jets and then another loss to the San Francisco 49ers, I'm not sure there's much more you can ask for.
Yeah, they started off really poorly, and the Lions were pretty much the laughingstock of the NFL for the first week. And for them to come back like this is just very big in terms of, you know, people talking about Matt Patricia, you know, them taken seriously as a coach, you know. And
that's a great point.
Yeah, and, you know, the players that needed to step up, they stepped up. You had Matt Stafford going 18 for 22, 217 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. You got Kerryon Johnson, who rushes for 158 yards on 19 carries. That's what you need for an offense that's been struggling these past seasons.
You know what, Alec? I got to level with you. I don't even think that is what the Lions need. Matthew Stafford is undefeated in his career when he has a 100-yard rusher. He does not need 250 yards on the ground from his rushing attack. If he gets about half of that, the Detroit Lions are going to be a very, very dangerous team. Matt Stafford didn't have to do a lot in Sunday's game, people. He only threw 22 passes, like you just said. He went 18 for 22. But the Detroit Lions won that game because of their rushing attack. And the idea that the Detroit Lions could be a contender in the NFC North and the NFC because of their rushing attack is just something we have not seen the last few years.
It's not something that that any Detroit Lions fan has seen since Barry Sanders.
Yeah, I've never seen it in my whole life.
Neither have I. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. And when you have that threat now, Matt Stafford is licking his chops right now because now he's got a whole offense that he can play with. And with as tight of a division as the NFC North is, you're right. They are on a clean slate, and they have all the power to make or break their season. And it's just all up to how Matthew Stafford, Kerryon Johnson, wide receiving core, and the defense does to step up their game to make sure that they get these huge wins.
And you know what? Looking forward, the next 6 games, I can read off to you the Lions' schedule. They host the Seahawks. Then they travel to Minnesota to take on the Vikings. They travel to Chicago to take on the Bears. They then host the Carolina Panthers. They host the Chicago Bears, and they host the LA Rams. It's a very tall order these next 6 weeks. But you know what? They got the brunt of their division schedule coming up, and it'll be very interesting to see what this team does. Obviously, they'll be 9-3 6 weeks from now. Just messing with you there, but I mean, wouldn't that be something? But you know what? These next few weeks, we'll really get a chance to see what this Detroit Lions team is made of. And if you're a Detroit Lions fan out there, why not be optimistic about what this team can do moving forward?
Yeah, and you know, them having the fourth hardest schedule in the NFL, it's really an opportunity for them to prove to Detroit if they're a good enough team to be taken seriously in the playoffs or even win a playoff game, because we haven't seen that either in our lifetimes, you know?
Where are you at with Matt Patricia?
Right now I'm feeling, at first I was kind of about it because, like, you remember how hard they were going training camp with how hard sure. they're conditioning players, and that kind of put me off. But, you know, seeing the success that they've had recently, it's starting to make me think, you know, the prodigy of, you know,
Bill Belichick, yeah.
Yeah, I just think that he can get the job done for right now. I think that he's in a solid spot because right now he's in his first season, so it's kind of like a lag time, period, you know, kind of similar to where Scott Frost is. You know, because it's, you know, he's coming into a new program with entirely new people. And I didn't really expect to do this great off of, you know, his first season. But, I mean, with the fourth hardest schedule, I'm liking where this is going, to be honest.
Agree. And you know what? They'll have a hell of a challenge on Sunday with the Seattle Seahawks coming to town. The Seattle Seahawks defensive statistics, they have given up the second fewest yards so far through 6 games. And they're 6th in yards per game. So be very interesting to see what the Lions can do in that game as well. And I guess we'll break that down certainly more as the week progresses. But it'll be interesting to see what Matthew Stafford can do faced with a secondary for the Seattle Seahawks that no longer has Richard Sherman. It no longer has Earl Thomas for this season, and it no longer has Cam Chancellor. So, you know, despite those defensive numbers, I certainly believe in the Lions' offense to put together a lot of great drives and probably put a lot of points up on the board and give their team a chance to win. You know, whether or not they win this game will probably come down to how they limit Russell Wilson on the other side of the ball. But, you know, I certainly think the Detroit Lions' offense is good enough to keep them in any game so far, or in any game that they'll have remaining on their schedule. It'll be really interesting to see how they fare against, you know, teams like the Seattle Seahawks as well as the Carolina Panthers and Los Angeles Rams in the coming weeks. But what I want to do right now is I want to hit our second break, and when we come back, we can play for you the audio from Mark D'Antonio's press conference that he had earlier today. Then we'll kind of put a bow on the entire show, wrap everything up. So stick around. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin today. Al will be back in tomorrow, like I said. If you have any thoughts on the Detroit Lions or the Michigan State Spartans with their games this past weekend, please feel free to give us a call at 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. But what I want to do right now, Alec, do we have the audio ready? Not yet? Okay, certainly not. So what we're going to do next for you is we'll play for you the audio from Mark D'Antonio's Tuesday morning press conference. And I don't want to give too much away. I didn't listen to the whole thing. I only saw a couple takeaways from people like Chris Solari and Matt Charbonneau. But there is one thing that Mark D'Antonio said earlier today that really concerns me. And it concerns me regarding the quarterback situation for the Michigan State Spartans moving forward. After Saturday's game, I would certainly be a proponent of the Spartans playing Rocky Lombardi moving forward. At least for 1 week, just to kind of see what he's made of, kind of see what he's, see how ready he is for next season, just because, you know, I think with the way Lewerke's played this season, you know, he deserves to have a little bit of competition in that quarterback room for next year. And, you know, through his first season with the Spartans, you know, you always heard coming out of East Lansing how impressed people were with Rocky Lombardi's development. And you know, saw him in the spring game, obviously, last April or May or whenever the hell that was. And, you know, I thought he looked pretty impressive. He's a big guy. He's got a big arm. So, you know, for me, I kind of want to see what he's made of. But Mark D'Antonio said something that's kind of makes me a little bit nervous in regards to Lombardi's preparedness this season so far. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the Michigan State offense is made of, you know, coming off of that ugly game against the Michigan Wolverines, and, you know, whether we'll see any changes from the philosophy of Dave Warner moving forward as the season progresses. But, you know, right now with Brian Lewerke, I see this Michigan State Spartans team finishing 7-5. I don't see them winning on Saturday against Purdue. That'll drop them to 4-4. And I don't see them beating the Ohio State Buckeyes either. So, for me, I'd love to give Rocky Lombardi a shot and see what he's made of. And, you know, maybe he can push Lewerke a little bit, and iron sharpens iron, and maybe Lewerke will be a better quarterback next year. Or if not, Rocky Lombardi could take his job. Okay. Sorry, a little bit of technical difficulties there. But yeah, man, you know what? Lewerke will be heading into his senior season next season, and Lombardi will be a redshirt sophomore, which will be the same age that Brian Lewerke was when he took over the starting role of quarterback last season. And, you know, I think it'll be a great time at that point where it'll be a time at that point where we'll really be able to tell whether or not Rocky Lombardi is going to be ready as a quarterback in the future, just because, you know, at that point, if you've been in the program for 2 years, you kind of are what you are, I would make the argument. So, you know, if he's not ready at the start of next season, will he ever be ready to assume the starting role of quarterback at MSU?
You know, I saw him on one of the drives against CMU, and I mean, it was only a couple plays that he was in, and to be honest, I wasn't liking that much what I was seeing compared to Brian Lewerke. He's really good. Lewerke's good at scrambling when, you know, when the offensive line just gets torched by the opposing team's defensive line, which is a common problem that MSU's had this whole season. And Brian Lewerke has done a good job of adapting to that in the pocket. And I didn't quite see that with Rocky Lombardi. And, you know, I haven't seen enough of his throwing to be able to judge that. And so it's just, to be honest, it's ambiguous right now.
Yeah, fair enough, certainly. And you know what? I think where I'm coming from in terms of Rocky Lombardi is probably also the injury status of Brian Lewerke, just because, you know, obviously Dave Warner said that Brian Lewerke practiced last week. Lewerke and Mark D'Antonio both said he did not practice last week. You know, whatever the truth is, I'm not entirely sure. But it's clear right now that Brian Lewerke is not 100%. And at the very least, if Rocky Lombardi is not ready to start on Saturday, I would love to see him get in for a couple drives, maybe at the start of the second half with some scripted plays, and just kind of see what he's made of. From that regard, see how he can command an offense coming out of a halftime where they can make adjustments and put him in a position to succeed. That would be something at the very least I would love to see from the Spartans on Saturday. Because, you know, Brian Lewerke, whether his injury has really impaired his ability to be successful or whether he's just kind of had a down year all season, you know, either way, I think it's time for a change at quarterback for the Michigan State Spartans. So, you know, I'd love to see someone else under center on Saturday. I guess that's all I got to say on that.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm just not liking what I'm seeing out of the O-line right now, because the defense, all the defensive lines from every opposing team, you know, they just got to do a better job at closing the gaps. And I haven't seen any of that in any of the games that they're playing. It's just that they've just had this inability to be able to stop the rush, whether it's on a blitz or pass coverage. It's just they've had problems with that all season.
You're talking about the offensive line there?
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly. I would agree with that. And you know what? Cole Chewin's being out for the start of the year and maybe not 100% the rest of the way is certainly added to that as well. So I can understand where you're coming from on that. And you know what? Maybe to that end, it's not fair to put Rocky Lombardi in a position where he could really struggle as a freshman. But, you know, I guess it'll be interesting to see what the Spartans do coming up on Saturday. So do we have the audio ready now, Alec, or is it still not ready?
It's not loading. Yeah. Okay.
You know, every week I sort of get a gold card. I sit down and make a gold card every week. And on that gold card, I prioritize what's important in my life. All right.
So right now we actually do have the Mark D'Antonio audio from earlier this morning, and so we'll play that for you right here.
So when I look at it and I go boom, 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 right down the list, the first thing I'm going to say about this, I'm not going to have any more comments about the situation. I made my comments, and I'm going to let God take care of my battles. That's number one. Number two, I'm going to take care of my family. Number three, I'm going to take care of this football program and represent it with class. Number four, I'm going to worry about Purdue and worry about the X and O's and the personnel involved in that. And that's it. So I'll take no other questions about that, and we'll get on with Purdue. Otherwise, this will be the shortest conference, and you guys all drove up here for nothing. So I'll take questions on Purdue.
Coach, I guess we'll start off with Brian Lewerke, his performance, his physical condition, how much that plays into his status this week.
Sorry, I guess we're having a little bit of technical difficulties with the show right now. Bear with us real quick.
Stitch Fix is an
But anyway, I guess we'll go back to kind of a couple points I didn't get in about the Detroit Lions on Sunday's game. You know, it was pretty awesome to see TJ Lang come back after suffering his sixth concussion. It was good to see him get back as well. The offense did a great job running the ball, and the defense, although they didn't come up with any turnovers in Sunday's game, they did a great job of, you know, slowing down Kenyon Drake and Frank Gore. And, you know, they did a good enough job of taking the run away and limiting Brock Osweiler that they weren't able to have a ton of success in that game, or on offense, I should say, the Dolphins weren't. So, you know, that was good to see from the Detroit Lions, and it'll be interesting to see how their defense carries that momentum over into the next week. But I got to say real quick that, you know, I kind of love what I've seen from Matt Patricia in terms of the way his scheme has worked to enable the Lions to put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. And even though Ziggy Ansah has barely played all season, they've done a great job, and I think they have the fourth most sacks in the NFL right now. And guys like Devon Kennard and Eli Harold have really stepped up and done a great job for the Lions, getting pressure on the quarterback. And, you know, pressure bursts pipes, as they always say, and pressure can cause turnovers. And whether or not you come away with a sack, obviously putting pressure on the quarterback can dramatically alter a play. And I love what Matt Patricia's been able to do this season, with certainly a limited cast, as well as a limited cast and picking up on, you know, the success that Terrell Austin had enjoyed the last couple seasons as well with Terrell Austin had enjoyed with his defenses for the Detroit Lions as well. So okay. But yeah, man, I think moving forward for the Detroit Lions, I guess we'll get into predictions right here on, you know, whether or not you think they can make the playoffs. And I guess for me, you know, sitting at 3-3 right now, I do think the Lions have a legitimate shot to make the playoffs just because, you know, looking around the NFC, the NFC West certainly appears to only have one playoff contender in my mind, and that's the Los Angeles Rams, just because the San Francisco 49ers lost Jimmy Garoppolo, the Seattle Seahawks have struggled all season, and right now I guess I would put the Lions above them as well. And for me, I think there's certainly another wild card spot to be had outside of just the one that I think you'll see coming out of the NFC South, certainly because, you know, to me, the Carolina Panthers and the New Orleans Saints both look like playoff teams to me. Saints are one of the best teams in the NFL, in my opinion. And the Carolina Panthers as well, sitting at 3-3. But either way, I see that team as a contender to make the playoffs as well. But I really do give the Detroit Lions a chance to get a wild card spot. I wouldn't pick them to win the division, certainly not. I still think the Minnesota Vikings are the best team in this division. But I certainly think that the Carolina Panthers and the Detroit Lions could very much be your two wild card teams coming out of the NFC. Your thoughts?
Yeah. See, the problem is with the NFC North is that this division is just so close to each other. You really have no idea who could end up at first and who could end up in last. To be honest, the Vikings are looking strong. Their offense, led by Kirk Cousins, they've been getting the job done. You got the Bears. Even though their defense hasn't been performing as great as they have recently, they're still getting the job done. Green Bay, you know, Aaron Rodgers is just Aaron Rodgers.
Always makes him a contender no matter what the rest of their roster looks like, right?
Yep. And in my opinion, he's the best in the NFL right now.
In my opinion, he's the best to ever do it. You know, Tom Brady's obviously the GOAT. He's won 5 Super Bowls. But when you look at, you know, from a pure talent perspective, I would say that Aaron Rodgers is certainly the best quarterback I've ever seen in my life. So
really,
I would say so. Yeah, just because, again, Tom Brady has had the benefit of Bill Belichick his entire career, which isn't to say Tom Brady isn't great, but Aaron Rodgers, just with what he's had to overcome week in and week out for about the past decade, you know, I look at Aaron Rodgers, and if he were in New England, he would have probably 6 or 7 Super Bowls by the time it was all said and done. He's truly that outstanding in my mind.
Yeah, and then you can't knock Tom Brady's, you know, achievements and stuff, but yeah, I would agree with you. Aaron Rodgers, he's had a lot more adversity to overcome than Tom Brady because he was put in a beautiful storm. Like, I understand Aaron Rodgers had the opportunity to be right behind Brett Favre and all, but, you know, Tom Brady, you know, he's right behind Doug Flutie. And, you know, he was really great for New England as well, you know, just like how Brett Favre was for
Drew Bledsoe.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah, Drew Bledsoe. Jeez, man. Drew Bledsoe, yes. He had the opportunity to work behind him. And so, you know, both had great QBs to work behind, but honestly, Aaron Rodgers had more adversity to overcome getting drafted by Green Bay.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you know what? Adversity may not necessarily be the right word because it's one of the great organizations in all of the NFL. But, you know, when you just look at what Mike McCarthy and what Ted Thompson have kind of surrounded him with, I just think that he's always kind of had an uphill battle. In that he's really outside of when they contended for that, contended and won that's contended for and won that Super Bowl. Geez, what's wrong with me? About a decade ago, they had a pretty stout defense, but since then, we just haven't seen the same success from the Packers defense ever since then. So right now, what I guess I want to do is we'll go to our phone lines. We got one of our favorite callers, Ray from Indiana, on line one. Ray, how we doing, baby?
Hey, I'm going to tell you something. Now you know why I call them the bullies. That Bush guy, if I went on the field and tore that field up like that, I would get criminal charges pressed against me. I don't know why the University of Michigan State doesn't file charges on that kid. He had no business tearing that field up like that. I don't know why one of the players didn't go over there and punch him right in the nose.
You know, we kind of talked about that yesterday, Ray, actually. Darian Harris said on Sunday that, you know, if that would have happened when Darian was there, that there certainly would have never been. There wouldn't have even been a game at that point because a fight would have broken out right then and there.
Well, you know the two biggest plays in the game, as bad as your offense played the whole game?
Mm-hmm.
When it was 7-7, and the only touchdown you get is a 5-yard reverse play to the quarterback.
Yeah, the Sparty special.
7-7, they've got two fumbles, okay? That guy threw an interception, and there was nobody left, and he would have went into the end zone. And that receiver from Michigan, you got to give him a lot of credit. He pulled that ball out of his arms, or that's an interception.
You're talking about
the
Kari Willis.
And then when the other one was 14-7, your linebacker's got a ball right in his hands, and he drops it, and it goes right into the receiver for a first down. It would have been fourth down.
You know what, Ray? There were actually two plays like that were batted up in the air, and Michigan came out with both of them. So you're absolutely right that, you know, I think it was Joe Bocci. The ball went right through his hands on that play, and it could have been a huge play because it could have given the Spartans another short field. I got to agree with you.
Yeah, but I tell you, and I don't know why in the second half you completely abandoned, as bad as he was throwing the ball, you abandoned the run. Michigan does have a great defense, but I'm going to tell you right now, you've got to mix it up. You can't just pass the ball all the time. You had Scott back in the lineup. Why didn't you try any runs around end or anything in the second half?
You know, I got to agree with you, Ray, especially early in that game. You know, I think it was like their first play from scrimmage. MSU threw a swing pass out to L.J. Scott in the flat, and it worked for about 15 yards, and they didn't go back to
that. Yeah, and then you got a 22-yard pass down would have been in the 30, and he lets it go right through his hands. That was the only good throw he had all day, and then they rocked him out of bounds. I thought they could have called personal foul on that, but they're not going to call that. So, you know, it was just ridiculous after that. I've seen probably four passes to the middle of the field. Two of them worked after halftime,
mm-hmm.
and the other two were open, and he missed them.
He was missing throws all day, Ray. I got to level with you. You think the Bullies are going to win the Big Ten championship?
Oh, my God. I hope it's Ohio State because I don't want the Bullies to go to the playoff. I'll tell you what, if the Bullies do get in the playoff, I'm praying to God they get Alabama first game because Alabama will slaughter them.
You think Alabama will slaughter him?
I think so. Don't you think so?
You know what, Ray? I got to level with you. I think Alabama's on a different level than every other team in college football right now. You know, in the past,
right.
Yeah. You know what? In the past, Ray, they would always have game managers at quarterback, and this year they have an absolute stud in Tua Tagovailoa.
Right. He has not played in the fourth quarter the whole year. He will know in another week. LSU and them got to play against each other, and that's going to put the Bullies number four in the country unless somehow Penn State can get their act together and go in the Big House and pull an upset.
Wasn't Michigan already ranked fourth? I think they're fourth in the AP poll right now, Ray.
No, I'm talking about the playoff system. They're number five in the playoffs.
Oh, gotcha. They released the playoff rankings and they're just outside.
The top four will get in, and I don't want the Bullies to get in there. Do you want the Bullies to get in there?
I mean, I'm a journalist, Ray. I got to be pretty objective. No, but you know what? In all seriousness, as a Spartan student, no, I would not want Michigan to get into the college football playoff.
I'm rooting for Ohio State. Ohio State, they have fallen apart. I knew they were in trouble 2 weeks ago when they played Minnesota. They looked terrible. And then I watched that Purdue game, and they were running all over, passing all over. If they don't get their act together in a month, the Bullies are going to go in there and beat them.
Their defense is terrible, Ray. Absolutely terrible. And you know what?
They've got 4 weeks to get it together. They got the talent. They're just not getting the talent out of them. Since Urban Meyer had that scandal, that team hasn't recovered from it. I mean, you look at the wins they had now. TCU wasn't any good. They've lost three or four games.
Right.
You look at Penn State, they've lost two or three games. They don't look that good. Wisconsin, none of them look very good. The only one that looks good is the Bullies. They do have a great defense, but they don't have enough offense to contain with Alabama.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. Thanks for the call, Ray. Love hearing from you.
All right,
buddy. All right, have a good one. Yeah, Ray from Indiana, never shy to speak about just how much he hates the University of Michigan. But you know, with just a couple minutes left here, I'd like to apologize for some of the technical difficulties we had this hour. Bear with us. Al Martin will be back in tomorrow, but you know, it'll be interesting to see what Michigan does the rest of the year. You know, certainly in my mind, they're the favorite to win the Big Ten at this point. They got Penn State in 2 weeks. They got a bye week between now and then to get healthy a little bit. And, you know, who knows? You might see Tariq Black playing a major role in that game. You know, you saw him a little bit on Saturday against the Spartans. He was on a pitch count. But, you know, with two more weeks to come back from that broken foot that he suffered, both Tariq Black and Rashawn Gary could be back for the Michigan Wolverines. And, you know, at that point, I'm not sure anyone in the Big Ten could contend with him, Alec.
Yeah, that's a scary sight to see. When you got players like Rashawn Gary and all of them on the defense, man, that defense, that's hard to stop, especially Big Ten teams' offense. You got quarterbacks like Brian Lewerke. Man, it's just, there's nothing you can do about that. They're the best offense, I'd say, in college football right now.
The best defense, you mean?
Sorry?
Best defense, you mean?
Yes, that's what I meant.
And you know what the crazy thing is? They haven't even had Rashawn Gary, and they're still great because they have studs like Kalik Hudson and Chase Winovich and David Long and LaVert Hill as well. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. You think they'll beat Penn State in a week and a half? I do.
Yeah, I would definitely have to say so.
What about Ohio State? Right now, if you had to pick Michigan or Ohio State, who wins that game in Columbus?
You know, before this past Saturday, I would have said Ohio State, but since Purdue just steamrolled them, I have no clue. That's up in the air right now.
Agreed. I think I'd still have to pick the Ohio State Buckeyes just because they have that cachet in my mind, but, you know, it's not a sure thing. And, you know, following the loss to Notre Dame at the beginning of the year and kind of how they looked subsequently, Michigan did, I figured Ohio State would steamroll them. But, you know, now I'm not so sure, and I'd give the Wolverines a real shot to get to Indy. So, for all of us here at Current Sports, Alec Reel behind the glass, as well as Tino Abarca and Michael Duke, I'm Jack Kerwin. Thanks for tuning in to today's edition of WKAR's Current Sports.